welcome to you, fans of improvised music. We are here to supply you with interviews, music, thoughts, with improvisers that have played at the Kuiper Pass Cafe on their Thursday night ongoing music series, presenting the avant-garde, the creative, experimental, and boundary-pushing musics. Tonight, we present in conversation and concert Adam Zahler, multi-instrumentalist. Adam's backstory is quite unique. We are often the sum of our experiences. Adam's, our singular. From boy soprano to experimental sound producer. Presented as always by the Kuiper Pass Cafe, voted number one Middle Eastern restaurant in the Twin Cities. Please stop by for dinner on a Thursday and stay for the music. I am your host, Paul Metzger. Being your guide through the often winding tall grass pathway. What we find together. Those drawn are drawn. Those not are not. It's something that happens by chance, I believe. So without further hesitation and pondering, we will present a short excerpt from the solo performance of Adam Zahler on synthesizer and other acoustic instruments, including a keyboard-operated recorder, following the music, we will step into conversation. Please enjoy and suggest to a like-minded friend that they listen to this podcast. You can find it online or on any of the various aggregators, iTunes, and the like. Thank you always for listening and being interested. And now, Adam Zeller.
Thank you.
Adam.
Paul.
Am I saying Zaylor?
Zaylor.
With a long A.
Yep. I don't know why. Looks like Zoller.
Does.
But we say Zaylor. I didn't decide that. I think if I decided, I'd just do Zoller because that'd be more convenient for everyone. Mm-hmm. That's okay. Mm-hmm. Zaylor.
Now, is that a German name?
Do you know? Yeah, it's German language, yeah.
Okay.
Accountant.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Nice.
Yeah. And you got any of that?
No, I don't think I'm actually German, even. My mother... So that name is my mother's name. My mother's family name. Mm-hmm. And my mom's adopted. So she's not blood related to her parents. So any of their, you know,
okay,
genetic lineage is not mine.
Then, question, nothing to do with music.
Sure.
Prying.
Go ahead.
Interesting.
Yeah.
To me. How's a fella end up with his mom's name rather than his dad's in this culture?
Yeah.
How's that go?
Well, I started with my dad's, and I dropped it. So I was Adam Lawrence Zaylor Brown.
Okay.
Now I'm Adam Lawrence Zaylor.
Yeah. So you, was it hyphenated?
No, Zaylor was a middle name. I had two middle names.
Oh.
So I had it legally changed. Dropped my dad's name.
Legally?
Yeah.
All right, man.
I had to go to a judge.
You have to put your...
I did it right after I finished undergrad.
Okay.
You have to put your... you have to put an ad in the paper to do a name change. And they don't actually print it, but it's like held on record at a newspaper for like 3 weeks or something. In case there's like someone with an outstanding debt or something, you have to like put it in the public record. And it's this sort of weird archaic law, but it's true.
But they don't have to publish it.
They don't literally print it, but it's like, I guess if anyone needed to call...
That makes me happy because it's like a little just arcane thread.
Absolutely.
And then someone registers it at a paper in some official way and just sits in a like a little box or some shit and I like that.
Right. Yeah, I kinda liked it too, actually. It was weird. It was like, you can't have your court date until your name's in the paper for like 3 weeks or something.
But not,
6 weeks, I can't remember.
Not actually in it.
It's like a waiting period.
Registered.
Yeah,
with
it's registered
the paper.
With the paper.
Fuck me.
Right.
That's good.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Anyway, that's just, I like that kind of thing.
Sure.
So I could sense there was something cool there.
Right.
And asked you about it.
Yeah.
So you're now I think of you primarily as a guitarist, but I have a feeling there's, you know, I know that there's also recorders, like a suite of recorders that you play, as well as I'm sure other things I don't know about.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's hard for me. People ask me what instrument you play, and it's hard for me to, I like literally have to say multi-instrumentalist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so like tonight I'm not playing guitar.
Mm-hmm.
I have some synthesizers and oscillators and hand-built circuit oscillator things and a recorder and a Suzuki Andes, which is like it looks like a melodica, but it's actually also a recorder. It's like a keyboard recorder thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's very cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then so I don't know. I don't know. It's a long story, but to try and do it quickly. My first instruments were voice and piano. I've been singing and taking piano lessons since before I started kindergarten.
That's messed up, man.
Yeah.
How were you doing that?
Well, my mother
like
was
lessons
a
of it?
Preacher. Oh. Yeah, well, not voice lessons, but singing actually like a lot and pretty seriously in like community theater and at church and then eventually in operas.
What?
As a boy soprano, yeah.
The fuck?
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I know.
God damn. All right, so let's just hold up.
Sure.
On opera.
Yeah.
So are there operas that are specifically for a boy soprano, or would you sing just the soprano part, or?
Yeah, there are rules for voice, for young voices, yeah. So okay. I would sing, so many sort of like grand operas, you know, your Bizets and your Puccinis and things, have like a children's chorus.
Okay.
Because that's like, you know, kind of the opera vibe is everything, you know, horses and cannonballs and every kind of singer and every kind of dancer and clown, you know, whatever. So yeah. Their children's chorus parts are pretty common. They're usually not very extensive, but they're in there. So I don't know. There's a little famous. I sang it with the. It was when I was in Detroit, late elementary and early middle school. I was singing boy soprano with the Michigan Opera chorus, and so I sang in
the
like,
one in Detroit that they built. The Opera House?
The Detroit Opera House, yeah.
Fuck me, man. Yeah, I love that. That's a whole podcast right there.
Isn't that cool?
Just talking about how they made that.
I know.
And how fucked Detroit is.
I know.
And how... Oh, man.
Yeah, I know that.
I got a lot of material
going into
on
that.
That
neighborhood as a kid, you know, was pretty trippy. Because you're driving past, like, you know, prostitutes out in broad daylight on Woodward Ave, and you're like... This really, you know, I don't know, any, just a couple blocks from the theater, you know, we'd go to, like, on long breaks after, in the middle of tech rehearsals, we'd go, like, get a pizza, but the Little Caesars would have, like, a bulletproof glass turnstile.
Yeah, man.
You know, and, like, there'd be skyscrapers a couple blocks away with, like, tree branches growing out of, like, the 12th-story windows, because they were, like, abandoned and gutted, and then you're in this, like, beautiful opera house. It's, like, it's really weird.
It's absolutely mental in a city that's dying.
Yes.
They had the idea.
Yeah.
So misguided.
That an
opera house is going to fucking help
gel everything.
Turn it around.
It's part of the Renaissance, down by the Renaissance Center and all of that.
Like that level of a city's failure.
Yeah.
That was their idea, and the opening concerts they had,
because
I had a brother who was living near there.
Sure.
They would have police and stuff on right at the exit and stationed, and they'd flag people which way exactly to go so they wouldn't take like a turn somewhere.
Yeah, because it's such a rugged neighborhood. Yeah.
And in the abandoned apartment buildings that they would go by, they went in and just sort of, what do you call it? Just like a facade of someone living there.
Yeah, they were doing that during the Super Bowl, too, recently. They put styrofoam facades on those buildings to, like, make them look like when they did the Goodyear blimp shots.
Yeah.
You know? So
and they would do it also on the inside where they'd put, these are abandoned, derelict. They'd go in and they just, with battery, because there's no juice, a lamp.
Yep.
And a curtain,
yep.
You know, to make it look as though
it's
this
like
is
inhabited. Or
whatever. Yeah. And then, Jesus Christ, man, that is lunacy. And you were right.
I was right there.
You were right in it.
Yep.
That's weird.
Yeah. Really weird. Yeah.
Yeah. Fui Chicago.
I know.
All right, man.
So that's early in my music life, and actually the.
So what do you? Oh,
go ahead.
Just to.
Yeah.
This, you know, not everybody does this.
Right.
Where are you at with that? So you're, you know, you do that, I assume, up till like age 11 or so, or in that zone?
Yeah, 11 or 12.
So where are you at with doing it? Like, by the time you're 11 and stuff, you're kind of like more aware that you're doing some weird shit than you are when you're a littler dude.
Yeah.
Like, how did you process that as doing, like, starting to realize, oh, this is some shit that most kids don't do.
Most kids don't do. Well, I basically knew that right away.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah, I mean, we're going to do my, I've lived a lot of places and been a lot of places and in really drastically different, you know, feeling places through my life in like short bursts. I moved a lot as a child, but anyway, like so we had moved from rural Northwest Ohio, a town called Findlay, little town, but it was like a Cooper tire plant town. It was pretty rural there, and that's where I did most of my elementary school. And then late elementary school, we moved to Detroit, And the choir director at my mom's, the church my mother was minister of, was also the chorus director for the Michigan Opera.
Oh, dang.
She found out before we even got there that, you know, the new preacher has some little boys that can sing. So me and my brother both did it.
Oh, y'all both did
that. We both did it, yeah. And yeah, I'm the oldest, and then my middle brother is just a year and a half younger than me. We were both doing it. And so before we even literally moved, we had auditioned for her.
That's crazy.
And then, so my very first day, this is a weird story. It's like, I knew it was strange then, and now I think back, and it's just absolutely bonkers. Mm-hmm. My very first day of fifth grade at my new school, I had to wear a suit to school. And then I got picked up after like second period in a stretch limousine to sing for a commercial for Ford Motors.
No, man.
Yeah, we didn't actually end up on the air because they picked Charlotte Church instead. I don't know if you remember her, but she was some kind of semi-famous opera singer, but like with some crossover appeal. But they, but we said we were on like the promo for all the execs. Mm-hmm. They were doing it with a children's chorus.
I dig.
And it was the new millennium ad campaign for Ford Motors. So I got
picked.
I know. It was wild. So you know.
So you're living inside that mental shit. That's craziness of what music is.
Yes.
And what
a
musical expression is.
Right.
And that's fascinating to be in, to have that be your fucking entree.
Yes. Into like, I mean, that was, you know, those were my first gigs.
How are you not like in an asylum, man? That's crazy.
Well.
I figured, because I always figured like a boy soprano, right? It's just like that train goes to one station.
Crazyville?
Well, adolescence, you know, and like then your game's over, and you, like the world's
I see what you mean.
Most brilliant
boy soprano,
you just don't get to do that anymore.
Yeah, that's true. You literally, so it's like, that one runs out, so you got to transition into
something.
You don't
have that.
Yeah,
that's,
right.
Mm-hmm. So it's just like so fucked up and wild, you know.
It is.
So how do you cat over after that then? So let's say you're no longer doing that, you know, eventually.
Right. Well, I was playing in the school band, and I had always taken piano lessons.
Mm-hmm.
I started, just to back up slightly, I took piano lessons also before I started kindergarten, because I was driving my parents, so the story goes, I was driving my parents completely batshit crazy at home, bothering them all the time, busy little kid, and they didn't know what to do with me, so they stuck me in piano lessons with the church organist.
And you took to it, or was it a drag?
Well, I went through periods. There was a really, really awful period where I think any other parent... My mom's a little crazy, but kind of in a good way sometimes, and she just was so persistent. It was like she just saw that this is the right thing for Adam to do.
So she hung on him.
I'm going to ride him and just get through the rough patch. Because there was a patch when I was in, I don't know, second grade or something, when I would just throw a fit before every lesson.
Right on.
Right when it started getting hard, you know, like it had been, I like took to it like a duck to water, and then, you know, in your little kid brain, you know, you can never be wrong and everything is easy. And then it was basically the first thing in my life that was ever difficult, and I just fucking objected to that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I get that. I still object to shit like that.
Right.
Oh, wait a minute. The effort is involved here.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's try a different move.
I'm not into that.
Yeah.
I like to look good.
Yeah, little Adam doesn't like it.
No, I don't like,
All right, so you had to push through that shit.
Yeah. So, but to get back to how I got out of boy sopranoing, I had piano already. And somewhere in the middle of boy sopranoing, I had also started the trumpet at school.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think by the tail end of boy sopranoing, I was also playing bass in the school jazz band. Okay. Not sure on the whole chronology of all of this, but at my middle school, so maybe I hadn't quite started playing bass yet, but shortly thereafter I started playing bass.
So you just dipped into shit, like...
Yes.
You saw, like, upright, and you're like, yeah, I want to get that going.
Well, I was playing an electric bass, but yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then, trumpet.
Trumpet, yeah.
Yeah, man. All right. Yeah. You're freaky. Right. So, let's kind of, because I can tell there's too much...
There are way too many
reticulations,
strains,
man. You're doing all kinds of.
Right.
So let's just zinc it up.
Okay, sure.
To, let's say you're 18, then what are you doing?
Yeah. Well, 18, yeah, that's kind of eliding a lot of stuff, but that's fine.
It's kind of what, a lot of stuff?
Eliding.
I don't know, eliding.
Like skipping over.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, okay, 18, I was kind of like wanting to be a rock star.
Right.
Playing. Yeah, I was playing. I was very influenced by hardcore punk and sort of like what I thought of. Okay, so we really should go. I don't know. I don't care. We can talk about whatever you want to. But I'd be remiss if I didn't mention something between Boy Soprano and 18, which is my friend Bill Brovold. I don't know if you've heard of this guy.
No, but I haven't heard of him.
He's a
so much.
Detroit. He was a Detroit. Well, he started in Reese Chatham's band in New York.
All right.
Lower, you know, downtown scene in the late 70s. And then I think he was from Detroit. I get his story wrong, but anyway. Mm-hmm. I met him in Detroit. I was friends with his son. Mm. And Bill, his son Thor, and his band, he had a band called Larval. They put some stuff out on Zodiac. John Zorn's label, and he put out a solo record or two on John Zorn's label as well. He had a relationship with Zorn. And
this was like some cat you're rolling with a little bit, or?
His son was my age, and, you know, Bill's old enough to be my dad, of course.
Okay.
But we'd go to his studio, you know, because his son was a bass player, and I was playing guitar by that point. This is when, like early high school, late middle school, early high school.
Yeah.
And we would go jam, and he's, you know, it's like, it's the place where you go play loud, you know. But it was Bill's studio, and Bill's also a painter, and he led this cool band, Larval, that had they played really loud, kind of like art rock with violins and saxophones, and they were his compositions. So he's the first person I ever met that was a self-proclaimed, you know, artist and musician, artist and composer, and... Mm-hmm. You know, whatever, and I just thought he was the coolest guy I'd ever met in my life.
Right on.
So that was in Detroit, and then we moved again and moved to Nebraska, and where there's a lot less of that kind of, or that kind of thing wasn't presenting itself to me, I'll say. And so
you're killing me.
I just like kept
in Nebraska.
I know.
Yeah, all right.
So, but like I kept the ideal of like Larval and Bill's band and everything kind of like in my mind.
Okay.
And I had been really into punk rock, and I'd been really into any kind of like whatever I thought of as like experimental rock or something as a kid. Mm-hmm. You know, as a kid, so bands like Primus and Mr. Bungle and. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, the Naked City records, John Zorn stuff and all of that kind of thing. I was pretty, you know, well, and I was still taking piano lessons. There's too many strands. I never picked a lane. So, okay, when I was 18.
Yeah, but let's just pretend you did.
Sure.
The rock star vein.
Okay.
So but you're interested in like art rock star in a way, sounds like.
Right. I didn't want to be
so
cool. To be cool, weird.
Yeah. And then, so you get into that, and in that era, guitar was a huge part of what was happening.
Yeah. So I had a little like rock power trio. Mm-hmm. We gigged in Lincoln. There was a club called Knickerbockers that's now been torn down because of a fire. But they would do all ages shows, and we had a little bit of a reputation in Lincoln. Because we were a pretty good little rock trio.
So you're doing mostly live. Do you guys record or do?
We did. We recorded a record too. Yeah, we recorded a record and
it's out. And what was?
Well, it's. I mean, I think you'd have to get it through me now.
That's all right. What was the name of the combo?
Skink.
Skink. Yeah. Look at you. God
Skink.
Damn.
Yeah.
And then, yeah. So I'm trying to get from that to what's happening tonight, now. And I don't know if we can get there, man, because
there's just too much stuff, but... Yeah. Well, and the other thing, at that time, I was also schizophrenically trying to do jazz, too, and classical music.
All right.
Because I was taking classical piano lessons and playing, like, Bach and Schoenberg and Hindemith, and I was trying to find like modern music, and I was in Nebraska with a very standard piano teacher. So I was doing Bach and Mozart, but then I would kind of push it and be like, can I do Schoenberg?
All right.
So I did the Sechs kleine Klavierstück, and I, so I was like learning that, and then I was also playing. I had quite serious little jazz combo that I was also playing keyboards in, and we were kids, but we had a trumpet player on the horn, and then bass and drums and keys, and we would do a little bit of like gospel stuff, gospel inflected stuff, because the drummer was a he's a preacher now, but he's
gospel-y.
Raised in gospel music, and but
all right. Well, let me ask you this.
I don't know.
Let's maybe get a little more gestalt.
Sure. Yeah.
So, it sounds like music was always like, in all its iterations, was always a main pull for you, is that fair to say?
Absolutely.
Or were there things outside of that as well? Were you that kind of cat who was just like into all kinds of weird shit, or was it mostly music was your main?
I would say it's fair to say music was always the main interest.
All right.
Yeah.
And then so yeah, we'll just have to say for now, really just a very all just scattershot.
Yeah, that's my whole thing, is like wide.
Yeah, that's definitely like that.
Yeah.
So what's, what is sometimes thought of as or at least what I think of as great about that is that it's sort of like unbridled sort of expression without needing to put any shunts in place, which I think is really good for the psyche and the creative process. And then some people say, especially in academics, in the academic arts, of like specialization or concentration is a sign of somehow maturity or something.
Right.
Like, do one thing. Did you run into that with your schooling? I'm like, people trying to, like professors or something, trying to be like,
hugely,
let's get down to one thing, even though that's not your natural inclination.
Yeah, well, I mean, massively.
Yeah, I would think.
I have 2 degrees in composition. I have an undergraduate degree from the Chapman Conservatory in Southern California, Orange County, and then I have a master's from the University of Minnesota here.
Okay.
Where I study with a composer named James Dillon.
Mm-hmm.
And, I especially in undergrad and the process of, like, applying to undergrad, it smacked me in the face. Like,
yeah,
I thought I was, like... Well, and now I know, in a certain way, I was, like, in great shape because I had so many reference points.
As if, man.
Yeah.
They want to... I'm not speaking for all of academia, but it is a big pressure to
narrow it the fuck down.
Prune your tree. And
right.
I'm not sure that is the correct...
I never bought
advice...
It.
For someone like you, it could be for someone who is lost.
Right. Right.
Which sounds like you were not lost.
No.
And it's a little bit like whatever kind of peg in another kind of hole, it sounds like. And that's unfortunate how they do it like that sometimes to cats. But then after that, it seems to me, correct me if I'm wrong, but sure. I don't think I am, that you have a, at least what little I know of your work, is it still you come off as having a lot of musical interests. Like that didn't take on you. You didn't become like, oh, I'm a neo fucking whatever, you know, composer or something on this instrument. You kept your
wide
palette.
Right.
You didn't narrow your palette down at all.
No.
Or did you?
Somewhat I did. I mean, I mm-hmm. dropped the kind of, I don't know. So we were talking about the stuff I was working on when I was 18.
Yeah.
You know, I eventually dropped off the kind of, like, you know, you literally can't excel in jazz and classical and, like, rock music, all three at the same time, because they're all such specific languages. So, you know, I dropped the kind of, like, seriously trying to, you know, do dinner gigs in a jazz combo and, like, mm-hmm. seriously trying to do piano recitals and seriously mm-hmm. trying to do, you know, playing rock gigs too. But I didn't drop it out completely.
Right.
Are kind of, they're a little mm-hmm. more synthesized and mellowed into mm-hmm. to a kind of, the things I do now are a little bit more on a what feels like a continuum to me, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. where it's all kind of always feels like my work instead of like trying to play X or Y or Z style at a certain time.
I hear you, man.
But yeah, I didn't really throw anything out.
Yeah. Dig. Right. Yeah. But yeah. You just maybe yeah. would. You're realizing you can't go all in on four different things.
Exactly.
And exactly. Yeah, I can dig it. So that's yeah. more organic to you.
Yeah.
And just pragmatism of
yep.
life energy and shit yep. like that.
Yeah.
So then that brings us to this evening you perform solo
yep.
on what you were mentioning, a group of oscillators and synthesizers, as well as something that's a recorder with
yeah, recorder
a keyboard
stuff.
Built
yeah.
in it. That's
right.
mental.
Yeah.
And so I'm excited to hear that. Feel like we didn't cover your shit at all in this conversation. No, you know, to be frank.
Yeah, well.
I mean, what the hell, man? So maybe another time, but because the boys choir shit gets to me.
Yeah.
And that whole repertoire and what that is. And yeah, it's very interesting. All right, so you're a cat.
Here
and,
I am.
Yeah, and so thank you for spending a minute or two. I you're leave very you
welcome.
With about 30 seconds.
Oh,
until it's time
to play.
Yeah, that's
okay. Well, that's all.
You're welcome.
That's all.
Enjoy it.
Yeah, thanks, man.
That's our conclusion for this episode. Cover Pass. Podcast. I hope you could dig Adam Zahler and his story, his past, development, present, and future. Performing solo at the Khyber Pass Thursday evening music series, where we do our best to present the most interesting, deepest that we can find of improvisers, of jazz or other genre. Until next time, this is your host, Paul Metzger. I'm saying thank you for listening. the journey continues next week.